We come now to the end of life issues in the series of homilies, and there are, you know, several things that we need to kind of consider because of the fact that as medicine has advanced, it's actually raised a number of difficulties, but also not taking their Hippocratic Oath very seriously. A lot of doctors are in the actual business of putting people to death, even though most people are unaware of it. Euthanasia is forbidden, of course, because it's a form of murder. Now, in order to understand this, we have to understand something. You say, if you're suffering, you know, we should put them out of their misery. Well, here's the thing. And it basically boils down to this. In the moral life, whenever you're trying to discern what you're doing morally, you have to look at what St. Thomas calls the conditions of the moral act. And what that means is this. There are certain kinds of moral acts that don't have any conditions. For example, committing suicide. When a person commits suicide, you just have to look at what they're doing, and you realize, you know, okay, that's committing suicide. You don't need to know anything more than that. You know, a person takes a gun, sticks it to the head, and pulls the trigger. Well, you know what that is, morally. You don't need any more. But there are certain kinds of acts that you actually need to know more about in order to discern exactly what the person's doing morally. Now, you've heard me mention this before. If you see a black man on the streets of New York taking a purse from an elderly white woman, and you ask yourself, what is that morally? Well, you don't know, ultimately. I mean, most people would immediately assume, he's stealing that from her. But you don't know that. It could be that that's his purse. As I've mentioned before, that given today's culture, you never know what guys are carrying these days. So it could be his purse. Or maybe it's his wife's and the old lady stole it from her. All right. So you have to know the condition of the purse. Whose purse is it? Before you can actually discern what that is morally. When it comes to putting someone to death, St. Thomas says, he says that the initial just putting someone to death, he says there's a bit of disorder in that when you just consider it in itself. He says, but when you take the condition of the person that's being put to death into consideration, it renders the moral act either good or bad. So, for example, if it's, say, you're in the military service and you're in combat and you shoot the other person, the fact that other person is a combatant renders that condition of them being a combatant makes it morally licit. It's the same thing with putting someone to death for capital punishment because of the fact that the person has committed a capital crime. That condition renders that act morally licit. In fact, St. Thomas says that it drains out that initial disorder of killing somebody and actually renders it morally good. But he says, lacking a justifying condition, then what happens is when you lack a justifying condition, then the act of killing somebody is rendered always bad. Now, this is one of the things you see, you know, when, for example, when people commit fornication, they think, oh, I just love him. That somehow renders it good. Sorry. Loving somebody doesn't render that act morally good unless the only condition that can render someone that act morally good is the condition of marriage. In the case of euthanasia, the suffering that the person has is not a condition. It's not a penal condition. St. Thomas says to put someone to death, they have to have done something penal or they have to do something that merits the death. So in the case of euthanasia, the fact that the person is innocent, the fact that the person hasn't committed any evils, the fact that the person is just suffering, that suffering is not a sufficient condition to put them to death and therefore is a form of killing them. So you can only, St. Thomas says, kill the guilty directly. The innocent sometimes may be put to death indirectly. For example, let's say, for example, you see this airplane and it's full of terrorists and they're flying the plane into the Sears Tower this time. And it's full of innocent people. Now, you could either shoot the thing down or you could let it plow into the building. Now, in that particular case, it would be morally justified to shoot the plane down, even though the innocent people are going to die indirectly, in order to save the lives of those inside. There has to be a proportionate reason inside inside the building. But when you're talking about someone direct killing someone directly, it can only be when there's a justifying condition. And this is an important point, especially when you have something like a tubal ligation, or not tubal ligation, but an ectopic pregnancy, you know, where you actually have to remove the part of the fallopian tube in order to save the life of the mother, even though the child inside is going to die. It's an indirect taking of the person's life. But in euthanasia, you can't do that. Now, this means that when someone is suffering or dying, you have to always maintain ordinary means, and we'll talk about that in the next homily. Also, the use, you also have to be really careful, too, about certain kinds of surgeries without a sufficient reason. And I talked a little bit about this before. Certain things that are allowed would be surgeries when done for a sufficient reason, such as restore the order of nature of a burn victim. Or in the case of other kinds which restore the order of nature, for example, if there's some type of cancer and a part of the body has to be removed and so they do some type of plastic surgery or something like that, that would be okay. But then there's also other listed kinds of operation which is based upon the principle of totality. Now, the principle of totality basically states that sometimes you have to sacrifice the part for the sake of the whole. So, for example, you know, if the arm becomes gangrenous and you're going to die, and a person's going to die, then you can remove it in order to preserve the person's life, even though they're not going to have an arm. Sometimes there's also a case of the lesser of two evils or double effect. For example, it is considered licit by moralists to give someone drugs with the intention of easing their pain, even though it might accelerate the death if that's unintended, for example. Somebody has a form of cancer that's very painful. You can give them a drug that may hasten the death, as long as that's not your intention. You know, your intention isn't to kill them. It's different from just overdosing them, which is a common practice in our culture, which I'll talk about in a minute. But you can give them, if it accelerates the death slightly, but it eases their pain. And this is based upon the principle of double effect, because of the fact that the releasing or easing the pain of the individual gives them a certain lucidity very often. It helps them to be more coherent, that type of thing. And so because you're using the principle of double effect, the principle of double effect requires that there is a proportion between the good effect and the bad effect. The bad effect is that it may hasten their death a bit. The good effect is those that you're easing their pain and making it possible for them to, you know, have you're actually able to help them to actually have a more happy death, something which would actually be, but here we're not talking again about overdosing. That's where the disproportion comes. This is what you often see. There was a story my mom told me once in the hospital in which she worked, where this woman came in, she was 56 years old, and complained of bowel pain. So they did the test and told her that she had an advanced form of cancer and she was going to die very quickly within 2 weeks, right? So they hook her up on morphine and they proceed to overdose her intentionally. This is a very common practice. They know, and part of the reason they do this is, in some places, it's just in order to make more room because they need the beds. In some places, it's done in order to, you know, make the people feel, you know, because doctors and people succumb to this false charity that, oh, we'll put them out of their misery and ease their passing. Here we're not talking about just providing them with a little bit to take the edge off the pain. We're talking, you know, enough to take an elephant down type of thing. And it looks natural because the person kind of naturally just falls asleep and the morphine causes them to die or other kinds of drugs. They can do that same thing. And the person just naturally passes. And very often they'll also put these patches, which can also have a legitimate medical use. For example, if a person imbibes too much fluid, they have this patch, they can put it on your ear and it will actually help your kidneys to really take out the water quickly, right? Well, very often they'll put the patches on the person to suck out all the water, give them morphine, not necessarily enough to kill them, but then they're basically killing the person by dehydration. That's another common practice you're seeing. So there has to be a proportion between the amount of painkiller you get and the effect that you're trying to achieve, that is, just enough to take the pain away, but not enough to wipe them out. This is much more common. I think in our culture, it's a little bit too easy for us to cast stones at, you know, some of the countries in Europe or that type of thing where they, you know, have all these practices of wiping people out, when in point in fact, it's happening right here in this country. This is one of the reasons why you had better make sure that you have a living will and a power of attorney, which I'll talk about in the next homily, but you better make sure you got both, and I'll tell you why when we get there. I mean, I know that some people in the medical profession complain, you know, power of attorneys, oh, they don't work. Yeah, actually they do, if you know what you're doing. But the moral to the story is that you have to be really careful, because there's a lot of people out there who think they're doing you good, and they're not. So in the next homily, we'll talk about ordinary and extraordinary means, and then also living wills. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost.